So in the summer of 2012, we had been married for 3 years and kind of began feeling the itch that we wanted to start our family. I ended up on a blog, and on the blog saw an ad for an organization that advocated for children internationally that were available for adoption with special needs. It took a few weeks where we kind of processed it and prayed about it and looked into it more. And so we decided to pursue the adoption process for Eastern Europe. So moms who do have prenatal testing and find out that their child has Down syndrome, the majority of the time, probably 99.9% of the time, that child is aborted. And so for River specifically, he was abandoned at the hospital. He stayed there for a month and then was transferred to the orphanage. They stay in what is referred to as the baby house for the first 4 years of their life. And then on their fourth, sometimes fifth birthday, they are transferred to an adult mental institution where they live out the rest of their lives. And most of them don't make it, you know, until their next birthday because they can't withstand the abuse and neglect. That was really heavy for us to learn, and knew that we had to do something. And so we have said multiple times that we cannot change the world for every single child, but we can change the world for one.
At the end of July, we submitted our dossier to, as far as paperwork and everything going to the country. And we got word at the end of August that we had travel dates, and they were within 10 days of getting that notice. So yeah, it's hurry up and pack and flights and where we're going to go, where we're going to stay.
We left on September 10th of 2013 and flew to Kyiv, Ukraine, and were there for a couple of days. We had our appointment with their Department of Adoption there, where we were presented with River's file. We said, yes, we would love to meet him. And we were extended a referral to go to his orphanage in his hometown of Lviv, Ukraine. We walk into his orphanage and the nannies whisk him away to change his clothes into, you know, what they would say is, I guess, you know, more presentable or whatever. And so they bring him to us and they just hand him to me. And she says, here, take him. He's a year old, you know, 2 days after his first birthday, and is the size of a 3-month-old and could barely hold his head up. 30 minutes after meeting him, they asked, do you want to adopt him? Yeah. And we looked at each other and both felt about as much peace in that situation as to be expected. And so we said yes. Our court date comes, and he was not present. We were there.
It's a courtroom. There's a judge. There's two people talking, but you have no clue what they're saying.
Yeah, absolutely. Nobody None. Is speaking any type of English except when they're grilling us.
The translator's giving you, it's okay.
Yeah, they keep
Everything's talking. Everything's good. It's okay. I'm like, okay. In the region you're at, once you're approved to adopt a kid, you can, or you have to have a 10-day mandatory wait period where anybody in the country can contest the adoption, whether they're family or not. So everybody always says, ask to waive it. Typically doesn't happen. It had never happened in the region we were in. So we asked to waive the 10-day period. And so they tell us to leave, and we leave. And our adoption coordinator calls us and said, they've agreed to waive the 10-day period. You're going to go home in 6 days or 7 days, or as soon as this passport gets relinquished to us and they gets all that done so he can travel. And we're just like, dang, that's really weird. We're about to take a kid home.
We had been told to expect an 8-week stay in Ukraine, that the entire in-country process would take 8 weeks. And at this point, we were at 3 weeks in. Mm-hmm. And start to finish, our process was 4 weeks to the day.
It was a long process, but when you look back at it, you see the Lord.
Even if you
didn't at the time, you can go back and just be like, boom, boom, to seats on the plane, to passports being ready, to travel dates, to arrangements and money coming in when you're raising money for the adoption at the very beginning. Just all throughout the process, you see the Lord work for him. Everybody says that we changed his life, but he will never know what he's done to change our life.
Yeah. So. And not just us, but everybody that he comes in contact with. He's a world changer for sure.
Yeah, he is.
7.5 years later, he has no clue
No.
the effect that he's had on this world. So.
And he's going to do awesome things.
Well, good morning. Hey, welcome. My name's Jeffrey. I'm honored to get to be here to preach week two of the Storm series. And we love testimonies like that. We love testimonies at Beltway. We use them all the time. Just they're powerful, powerful testimonies. We love to hear them. We love to whoop for them and clap for them when it's not us sitting on the couch. When we're the ones sitting on the couch or we're the ones sitting in an orphanage in Ukraine holding a child saying, hey, in 30 minutes, you have to decide if you want to take him home or not. When it's us that's the one behind the camera having to tell the testimony, we're a little less like, woo, yeah, go God, and we feel the weight of it all. We feel the weight of what a step of faith actually looks like. When I was 17, my parents came into my bedroom and they said, hey, we're moving from Lubbock to Abilene. And I, in all of my 17-year-old stubbornness, looked at them and said, you are. We are not. You can go ahead and move. I'm going to stay back. And so we found a family that was willing to let me live with them. We changed my address. I was not going to move to this place. Listen, the only redeeming thing about Abilene in my mind at that time is that y'all had Taco Bueno and we didn't. And Taco Bueno was like heaven food. We would just drive to Abilene just to eat Taco Bueno. Outside of that, I hated the thought of living here. So, I mean, at this point in time, I was at a private Christian school. I'd grown up with the same kids from the time I was in kindergarten until this moment. And my parents were asking me to leave Lubbock, which I liked, kind of. Leave the church that I liked, the friends that I had, the job that I had, and the school that I had to move here and go to public school. Any private kids, private school kids grow up in here? Yeah. The public schools, that was where all the bad things happened. We had public school. Growing up as a private school kid, we were like, public school, that's where the devil is. I mean, we just, you know, not going to do it. And so that was my little defiant attitude. And I said, you know what, I'm not going to go. And then one day I'm sitting in my bedroom at our house on 45th Street, and I felt like the Lord said, hey, you got to go. And I was like, hey, wrong Turner. But he was persistent, and so I walked into my parents' room, and I said, hey, I feel like the Lord said that I need to go with you. So we loaded up my car, it was a 1985 Jeep Cherokee, without air conditioning for the record, and we drove here, and we got here. Guess what? I hated it. I hated church, which the church we went to, this church, I hated it. Some irony there. I hated school. I sat with the drunk kids because they're the only kids in all of Wiley that said, hey, do you want to come sit with me? So for a year and a half, I sat with the partiers as they would tell stories about getting smashed on the weekend. And I'm there with my FCA shirt reading my Bible. Like this weird kid sitting with them. I hated it. Now, I can look back on that decision, that step where I felt like God said go, I can look back on it 20 years later and I can go, man, God, you did incredible things. I didn't love church when we first moved here. It was all different than what I'd grown up in. That first Sunday though, right about there at the South Campus, I met my wife. I loved her long before she loved me. I got two amazing girls because I moved here. It was here at this place under David's leadership that God really ignited something in me to do this, to preach and lead. Like it was here that I can give you so many examples of God moving in immense ways in me because of that decision. But the first decision was daunting and overwhelming. The reality is steps of faith when God calls us to, they can feel a little bit overwhelming to us. Whenever it's you that God's saying, hey, you need to adopt, then we feel the weight of it. When it's somebody else, it's like so cool. When it's us that God says, hey, it's time for a job shift. When it's us that we are the ones sitting behind the camera telling the story of the step of faith, it feels a little overwhelming. It feels different. And here's what I know this morning. Beyond a shadow of a doubt, it's you. It's you. God's calling you to a step of faith. And I know that because he's calling all of us to steps of faith. I can tell you areas in my life right now with Sarah that we are being called to steps of faith. The reality is God is calling, this is a blank for you to write your name. It makes it personal. God is calling you to steps of faith. What exactly does that mean? Because step of faith is just so Christianese. It's such a church word. When we look for the definition of faith, we usually land at Hebrews 11. It says, now faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. And even this, so faith is, and then here's the definition, the assurance, the belief that things we hope for are going to happen, the conviction, the weight of things not seen. Even then, the definition of faith feels a little nebulous. So what the writer of Hebrews does is gives us examples. Hebrews 11 is called the Hall of Faith. And it says this over and over again, by faith, somebody did something. By faith, Noah built an ark. I know we grew up with the Noah story, if you grew up in church. Picture yourself as Noah. You're in the middle of a dry and barren land, and God goes, hey, you gotta build a boat. It's like, okay, it's a sailboat, am I gonna start fishing? No, you gotta build a boat big enough that two of every kind of animal in the whole world can fit in, because then I'm flooding all the earth. By faith, Noah built the ark. By faith, Abraham took Isaac up to be sacrificed. Abraham was promised that he was going to be the father of many nations. Isaac is the son of that promise. And Abraham and Sarah were old when they got pregnant with Isaac. And now God's saying, hey, take him up to be sacrificed. And Abraham had to go, but God, this is the one you promised you would fulfill my destiny, and I can't sacrifice him. By faith, Moses was rescued out of the river, lived a life of luxury, and then had to take the step that he would lead the people of God out of captivity. By faith, the people walked across on dry land where there was a sea. By faith, the walls of Jericho fell down. And all the people did is walk around the city for a week. Maybe my favorite example in the Hall of Faith is by faith, Rahab, a prostitute, saved the two spies. And it is the belief in those two spies that led the people of God to trust that God would take them into their promised land. When we see the examples, all of a sudden the definition of faith makes a little more sense. It's often us just taking the step God is telling us to or calling us to, even if it doesn't make logical sense. I don't know what God might be calling you to, but I know this. He is calling you to a step of faith. And when we know, when we hear that, it can feel a little daunting. Can feel a little overwhelming, but you know what it also is? So exciting. Because when we step out in faith, and only when we fully step out in faith, do we experience God's power and God's provision. This is what I want for me. Unequivocally, I want to see God move in power and provision in my life. I want him to tell me to do something I can't do, and then we get to see him move and go, man, and I want this for you. I want you to experience the intimacy that comes with God showing off his power and his provision. If not, why are we doing all this? If I can do everything God has for me, if everything in my life on my own Jeffrey strength, as meek as it is, if I can do everything on my own, then why God? Why are we doing any of this? The reality is we can't, and when we believe that we can't and we step out in faith anyway, then we see God's power and provision. 19, our elders rolled out a 10-year vision for our church. It's called the 2030 Vision. You can go to our website and get more info about it. But I remember when David began to roll it out, I remember thinking, you're insane, David. Because he said, all right, here's one of the things we need to do. We need to start, we feel like in 10 years, God's calling us to start a ministry school. How many ministry schools had Beltway started before this? Zero. We didn't have our first clue on what to do with the ministry school. August will be the fourth semester of Beltway College of Ministry. Hold on, we're gonna get real clappy. Just give me a second. Another thing on there is he said, we feel like God says that we want to baptize 4,000 people in 10 years. That's 400 people a year. How many times have we baptized 400 people? Zero. We'd never baptized 400 people in a single year until 2023, when we baptized over 400 people for the very first time in the history of our church. How many churches had we planted? Because one of the things the elders said is we need to plant 5 churches in 10 years. We'd never planted a church before, except for the North Campus, which is one church in 2 locations. We'd never planted a church. We've now partnered with 5 different churches in planting all over the United States. We felt like God said there was a purpose for us to step into our city in counseling and in daycare, and right now, halfway across town, there is construction going on. Well, probably not right now, it's Sunday morning, but tomorrow there will be construction going on Beltway Ministry Center, which will open sometime next year, and there will be a counseling center primarily for teens and for kids, and then there's a daycare that's going in there. We launched Foster 325 because we felt like the Lord said we need to step in and partner with other churches all around the big country to end the foster care crisis in our city. And we now partner with 9 different churches. Listen, every one of the 2030 vision things that David and the elders put out, every one felt overwhelming. We've not seen them all to fruition either. But you know what we've seen in the step of faith that our elders felt like we were supposed to take? God move in power and provision. We are incapable of pulling off any one of those things outside of him. And yet we've seen him move in power and provision when we stepped out in faith. And today I want us to look at a storm where somebody does just that. So if you will, if you'll grab a Bible, there's one around you. If you didn't bring one, underneath your chair, the chair in front of you. If you're online, there's a Bible right there on the screen. We're going to be in the book of Matthew, chapter 14. We talked a little bit last week about the Synoptic Gospels. They're the first 3 books of the New Testament, Matthew, Mark, and Luke. And this story is told in all of Matthew, Mark, and Luke, but Matthew focuses on something different than the other 2 guys does. But before we get to our text, there's some backstory that we need because it really plays a role into how this goes down. So in Matthew, we see, right before this, in Matthew 14, we see that John the Baptist has been beheaded by Herod. So John the Baptist, Jesus' cousin, somebody that they loved, he was the forerunner to the Messiah. This is somebody that Jesus loved. And he was just killed by Herod. And what scripture tells us is that Jesus feels everything that we feel. So you know when you feel loss, Jesus felt loss. He's feeling it in this moment, and so he goes off in a boat by himself. And then people see him. And then hundreds come, and then thousands are there. And Jesus, being Jesus, he has compassion on them, begins to heal their sick, begins to minister to them. And they just keep coming in. There ends up being 5,000 men plus women and children. So somewhere between 7,500 and 10,000 people that Jesus is ministering to in this moment. And it's evening, and they're hungry. And so the disciples are like, Jesus, you got to tell them to go. There's no McDonald's right here. There ain't no Chick-fil-A. We got to send them away. And Jesus goes, no, what do we have? We have 5 loaves of bread, a couple of fish. And Jesus feeds every single one of them with just that. The food that wouldn't have even fed just the disciples ends up feeding 10,000 people with food left over. And so it's been this, they experienced the loss of John the Baptist and then the miraculous feeding of the 5,000. And Jesus sends the disciples across the Sea of Galilee and he's gonna go by himself. So, we don't ever do this. There's a TV show right now called The Chosen, and it depicts some different stories in the Gospels. And to me, the part of our text that the Chosen focuses on is incredibly powerful, and so I want us to look at it together.
We can't take much more water!
We'll founder! Better off wet and cold on land than drowned and dead out here!
Keep rowing! What are you doing?
Did anybody just see that?
Over there!
I don't see anything!
What are we looking for?
Go! Go!
Hit the boat!
Go! Let's go!
It can't be.
Everyone,
go!
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 Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go!
Everybody stop!
Stop!
Okay,
stop! Nobody
move!
That's not a ghost!
Are you crazy?
Immediately, he made the disciples get into the boat and go before him to the other side while he dismissed the crowds. And after he had dismissed the crowds, he went up on the mountain by himself to pray. When evening came, he was there alone. But the boat by this time was a long way from land, beaten by the waves, for the wind was against them. And in the fourth watch of the night, he came to them walking on the sea. So, picture this. They're in the middle of the Sea of Galilee in a storm. They're soaked to the bone. They've been rowing all night long. They have been working to try to get across the Sea of Galilee, and they're just floundering in the middle of it, and it's 3 a.m., because that's about the fourth watch of the night. And I don't know when the last time you saw 3 a.m. is, but unless you work overnights, 3 a.m. is, I mean, borderline ungodly. It is a horrible hour to be awake. These guys are exhausted. 3 a.m., rowing there and just so scared. And then But when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were terrified and they said, "It's a ghost." And they cried out in fear. When I've read this story growing up, I've always gone, "How? These guys thought it was a ghost, really?" Put yourself in the middle of Lake Kirby in the middle of the night. Somebody walks to you. You're not going to go, "Hey, I know that guy. That was, what's his name? That's John. I met him at the store the other day." No, you're going to go, "It's a ghost." That's what we're all going to do. It's the middle of the Sea of Galilee. In the middle of the night, they saw what could only be a ghost, and they're terrified. Plus, there's the custom at this point, this belief, that anytime anything bad was going to happen on the sea, there would be an apparition or a ghost that would precede that. So these guys are just sure it's a ghost. But Jesus immediately spoke to them saying, "Take heart, it is I, do not be afraid." And I love this so much because it's just Jesus. This is his heart. He knows all that they're experiencing. And he knows him being there walking on the water is just going to cause them more fear. So he goes, "Hey, just don't be afraid. It's me. It's just me. It's okay." And then Peter answered him and said, "Lord, if it's you, command me to come out on the water." And he said, "Come." So Peter got out of the boat and walked on the water and came to Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid, and beginning to sink, he cried out, "Lord, save me." Jesus immediately reached out his hand and he took hold of him, saying to him, "Oh, you of little faith, why did you doubt?" And when they got into the boat, the wind ceased, and those in the boat worshiped him, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God." So Peter goes, "Hey, if it's you, tell me to get out of the boat." And then Jesus tells him to get out of the boat. Can you imagine that first step for Peter? Like, he had been in boats his whole life. He's used to getting out of this boat. Usually, though, it's onto a dock or maybe even into shallow water. And he knows this first step is going to be into a raging sea in the middle of a storm with the wind whipping them about so bad that the boat cannot get across the Sea of Galilee. And so he puts that first leg out going, "All right, Jesus." Can you imagine what it felt like for him to put the foot down and then it to be firm underneath him? The confidence he'd have then to pull that second leg out. And then he's standing there on the water. His clothes are probably getting wet because the waves are still blowing all around him. And he's standing on the water looking at Jesus. And then he just begins to walk to Jesus, taking step after step to Jesus until he saw the wind, saw the waves. That story ends not in a way that Peter necessarily would have loved for it to. One of the things I'm always perplexed about in this story is I wish the writer had given us a little more details, because we don't know how Jesus and Peter got back to the boat. We know they did. We don't know how. Did Jesus carry Peter back to the boat? Or maybe, and I like to think this is not in the Bible, so this isn't, could very well be untrue. But how cool would it have been if when Jesus looked at Peter after he pulled him out of the water, if then Peter's faith was restored, and then they walked back to the boat together? All we know is they get into the boat and the winds cease. And this is the second time these guys see this same miracle. We talked about the first one last week when Jesus was asleep with his pillow and he calmed the waters. That time they were afraid. This time they go, "Truly, you are the Son of God," and they worship him. And often when we tell the story of Peter walking on water, we focus on the part of Peter's failure. Peter, how did you do it, dude? Why did you just stop looking at Jesus? What's wrong with you? You were walking on water and then you're sinking, and so much so that Jesus has to just thump you on the head and reprimand you in front of all the other disciples going, "Oh, where is your faith, Peter?" If I can point something out to us, Peter was out of the boat. There are two people that we know of in all of human history that walked on water: the perfect, holy Son of God who came to earth for the salvation of all mankind, and Peter who walked on the water. And often we can look at Peter's failure in this moment and it causes us to not lift our leg and step out of the boat, because we go, if that was the end result for Peter, I'd rather stay on the boat. And our fear of failure can prevent us from taking the step that God might be calling us to take. But we have to recognize Peter wanted to be with Jesus in the middle of the storm more than he wanted to be with the other disciples on the boat. Yeah, failure happened. You know what else happened? Peter walked on water. Yeah, at the point in this journey of faith, did he mess up and look at the storm? Sure. You know what he was doing right before that? The miraculous. And the enemy would love for us to not take steps of faith out of fear of failure. Let me just relieve you of this pressure. You are gonna fail. I am gonna fail. It is gonna happen. It's gonna happen more frequent than we wish that it would. Failure is just an inevitable part of the life that we currently live. But when our focus becomes avoiding failure, we won't ever take the steps of faith God has for us. Hey, dads, this is Father's Day. We can allow the fear of failure to prevent us from being the dad that God calls us to be. It prevents us from taking the step of faith because we go, well, I can't say no to that promotion at my job. I can't do that. Look at the economy. Look at the stock market. Everything's going up. I've got to say yes to this. And the step of faith may be saying no because God has something different for you. The step of faith might be looking at your kid and going, hey, we can't play a third travel team. I'm sorry. But what about that scholarship that they need? We can allow the fear of failure to stop us. Some of us, the step of faith as a dad is to really buy in to what God's doing. And you know what's going to happen? Because what the world says, dads who are really bought into faith and Jesus, what happens is people say that you're a little weird. It's time to get a little weird. The world needs dads who are chasing after Jesus, and we can allow the fear of what other people think or the fear of us knowing our own brokenness and not being able to be the dad that we want to be, we can allow that fear to cause us to not actually take the steps of faith that God's calling us to be. And the moment everything shifted for Peter is the same as everything shifts for us. He was walking on the water, and then he saw the storm. Saw the waves just beginning to rise. He saw the circumstances and stuff around him, and that caused him to have fear and then fail. For us, it's probably not a physical storm that's going to do that to us. But we know that fear, that feeling of failure causing us to feel like we're sinking. We take our eyes off Jesus for lots of reasons. One of the ways is just because things get difficult. Because things get hard or they get messy, and we can believe the lie that if it's difficult, it's not God. Except that contradicts James when he says, count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds. For you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness. Some of your versions might say perseverance. Doing what God calls us to do, actually, I'll almost guarantee you, is going to make things difficult for you. No one that's walked the journey of fostering a child or adopting a child would tell you that it has all been seamless. That it's been easy. No, everyone would tell you it has been difficult. And when we believe the lie that if it's difficult, it's not God, we take our eyes off of Jesus because we focus on the difficulty, and then we sink because our eyes are not on the one who we have faith in. That's what happens when we focus on difficulty. But it's not just difficulty that can cause us to take our eyes off Jesus. It's not even just the waves and the wind. We can take our eyes off Jesus because of distraction. Just as much as difficulty. I can't say this for sure, because this is the only life that I've ever lived, the current one I'm living. I am convinced that there's never been a time in human history that it's more easy to be distracted. Whether it's politics or social media or work stuff or busyness or activities or politics, again, that we can get way too focused on. It is so easy for us to be distraction. Distraction pulls our eyes off of Jesus. It's honestly easy for us to take our eyes off Jesus with things that are good but not best. Everything that I listed just then, not a bad thing. But when we say yes to good, we can often miss out on best. And that distraction pulls our eyes off of Jesus. And whenever we take our eyes off Jesus, we miss our walk on water moments of faith. I said it all day long. I fully believe that you have a step of faith that God's calling you to. Just like I know that I have a step of faith. Just like my 12-year-old has a step of faith that God's probably calling her to. They're all different. I know that he has one for you. And it's beautiful whenever we grab hold of that, because then we see God move in power and provision. But faith is going to require us to step out of the boat, which is hard because we like comfort. We like easy. And the thought of introducing unnecessary difficulty in my life, or the thought of introducing a lack of ease or a lack of comfort, feels contradictory to what we would ever imagine. But it is only when we take those steps of faith that we see God move in power and provision. And this is what I desperately want for all of us. I want to see him move in that way. So the question is just this today. What's it for you? What's the step of faith? For you personally, what's the step of faith maybe for your family? What's the step of faith that God might be calling you to? I have no idea what yours might be, but I know this. I'm so excited for you to find out. Because then you get to see God move in ways that we only see in steps of faith. Maybe it is becoming a foster parent. Maybe it is adopting a child. Maybe it is doing what Lance and Callie did. Maybe it's a change in jobs. Maybe it's a change in the way you're leading your family. Maybe it is a change in the schedule that y'all live. I don't know. Maybe your step of faith might be coming up for prayer after service, and that can be one of the largest steps of faith you can take. I have no clue what your step of faith is, but I know this. When you take it, you will see God move in ways that you never will outside of that. And it could be anything. He told Peter to walk on water. What a crazy step of faith he was asking out of Peter. And then you take that next step, and that feels a little daunting. Then you take the next one, and then the next one. And then guess what? At some point, you're going to fail. And whenever we fail, all we have to do is reach out to Jesus, who's reaching out to us. I'm going to say that again. Whenever we fail, all we have to do is reach out to Jesus, who's reaching out to us. This isn't the only time that we see this in Scripture. 2 Corinthians says, "But he said to me, 'My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I'll boast all the more gladly of my weaknesses so that the power of Christ may rest upon me. For the sake of Christ, then, I'm content with weaknesses, insults, hardships, persecutions, and calamities. For when I am weak, then I am strong." Hey, yeah, you're going to fail. His grace is sufficient. Yes, you're unable to do it on your own strength. His power is what makes us strong. And in our weaknesses, and I have a million. In my weakness, guess whose strength is magnified? His. You want to know what Peter probably did for the rest of his life on this earth? He'd be at a dinner party, and there, people are telling stories, and he just waits for his moment, and then he's like, "Hey, guys, one time I walked on water." He's not going to be like, "Oh, I did it," because he knows he didn't do it, because as soon as he took his eyes off the one he had faith in, he sank. When we allow our weaknesses and stuff to, when we allow God's strength to overcome our weaknesses, people look to him. Yeah, he's calling you to steps of faith. I don't know what they are, but I know this. He shows up whenever we take those steps. He shows up in power and provision. So I think we finished our notes. If you will, if you'll put your notes away, we're going to have just a minute to respond. Because I really want us to ask that question. What is my step of faith? What's my step personally? Maybe it's calling a relative that you've been estranged from and you feel like there's no hope. That's a big step of faith. Maybe it's talking to that person at work about what God's done in you. That's a big step of faith. I just want you for a minute, close your eyes if you want, help you focus, just to go, what's my step? God, what might you be calling me to? How do you want me to step out of the boat? Maybe you're going, "I don't even know how to hear God. How would I know?" Next week, we're going to really hit hearing God, but I'll tell you just a quick snippet right now. Just position yourself to hear him. Set aside the distractions and where you're planning to go for lunch, the things you have to do tomorrow, and just go, "God, I want to hear you speak to me." He wants to speak to you. God, for each and every one of us here at the North Campus or online, we ask for boldness like Peter. We ask for faith like Peter. Would we lift our leg and would we step on that water and would we just keep taking steps? And then, God, when we fail, We ask for a boldness to reach out to you, not try to figure it out on our own, but to reach out to you and allow your grace to be sufficient, your strength to be made perfect in our weaknesses. God, we thank you that you want to move in each and every one of our steps of faith. It's in your name we pray. Amen. Amen. You can stand up. One of the things we didn't even really focus on at the end of this story is Peter and Jesus get back in the boat, and all of a sudden everyone looked at one another, and their response to seeing God do something miraculous was to worship. And you know what is incredible is every week that we come into this place, we experience the miraculous. We get to be in the presence of God. Because of what Jesus did on the cross, we, regular common folk in Abilene, Texas, get to be in God's presence. So our response to seeing God move is worship. So let's take a few moments to worship together.